These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Happening here, what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. A field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop, children, what's that sound?
Says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. The West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. survive.
Country folks can survive.
I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive.
Country folks can survive.
North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive.
Country folks can survive.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, it's old Shazia's out here at my Mad Science Laboratory. Hope you all doing well. Got a pop quiz for you. You know, the power goes out. You ain't got no electricity. It's dark. What do you do? We're going to talk about that today. And so, hope you all studied up for the pop quiz. Otherwise, the nun will be around right shortly to smack your knuckles with a ruler. How you doing there, Thomas?
I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah, what do you think about the nun coming around getting everybody?
I was going to say, just my knuckles are a little sore now. They haven't even got to them yet.
Well, you know, as much as for everybody who's been out there listening, I'm kind of curious how many people's actually done a little bit of preparation as far as, you know, alternative energy goes. I did a video quite some time about called Simple Solar. And it showed where, you know, like companies like Harbor Freight, you can go out there and you can buy cheap little solar battery chargers and little solar panel kits. The one that I got, that's 40. Actually, I got a couple of them, but they're like 45 watts, and they come with a couple light bulbs and a charge controller, and you know, three panels. Those are, I got them on sale for about $140-$150. They're normally like $189. But either way, you know, it it'll charge up a pretty good battery bank. I use mostly lawn and garden batteries for size-wise, but, you know, you run as many batteries as you want in parallel, and you can have that time to run off of, you know, lights. And if you go to the hardware store and you look in the RV section, you could actually find these. They look just like regular incandescent light bulbs, except they run off of 12 volt. And they go anywhere from 25 to 50 watts, and they're really, you know, it just looks like it'll go right in a regular light socket. Obviously, you don't want to put it in a regular light socket, but it will go in there. And anyway, yeah. So my curiosity is, I'm wondering how many people who have actually, you know, went out and, you know, prepared for a little bit of stuff like that. You know, some rechargeable batteries, or, you know, even collecting up some old automotive batteries, some car batteries or whatever, you know, to build them a backup battery system. There's all kinds of inverters out there, and actually inverters are getting a little bit cheaper than they used to be. Now, whether they're as quality, what in tarnation is downloading on me here? That doggone noise is driving me berserk. I gotta figure out, how do you get on Skype, the tools section up here?
Is that maybe in the group?
I don't know, man.
Doesn't look like anybody tried to send anything.
Well, I keep hearing this boing. Maybe it's I'm gonna turn the sound off on that. Well, this makes for good radio. Anyway. There it is again. Did you hear that? Doggone it.
I heard it before. I didn't hear it that time. So.
Options.
Hopefully no one else heard it then either.
Let's see here. Sounds. Do-do-do-do-do. Mute. Mute all sounds. Hopefully that'd be all right. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, you can hear. I can hear you.
All right. Cool.
I don't know about the rest of the world.
Well, if anybody in the chat room can hear me fine, throw in a smiley face so we know we're all good to go and stuff. Anyway, seems like Sam's broadcasting there. Here, let me give myself some feedback. I'll push play. Do-do-do-do.
Your sounds.
Yeah, there we go. All right. Well, anyway, my curiosity is that how many people's actually went out and done a little preparation. Because you got to think about, in worst-case scenario, the power grid just went down, man. You don't know when it's coming back up, if ever. And so with that said, what kind of options do you have available? You know, if you got battery power, well, then you've got at least 12-volt lighting systems. And if you got enough battery power, you've got inverter systems that you can get anywhere from a few hundred watts all the way up to... Doggone it, my buddy was gonna buy an inverter that cost about close to $700, and it's really, really powerful. When you could run your house off this thing.
Right. I was gonna say, we know somebody that has done the same thing, not because he's worried about the power going out, but because where he moved to, the power is so incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
We're paying, you know, here in the States, we pay between like 12 and 15 cents most places. Some places, like where we're down, you know, down here, we're only paying like 10 cents a kilowatt. But there are a couple places where you can pay as much as 50-60 cents a kilowatt.
Well, that's that gets to adding up after a while.
Yeah, real quick. I mean, if you use $100 worth of electricity where you're where you're at when it's cheap, then that's, you know, $400 or $500 a month just, you know, on electric, keeping your lights on, you know, keeping the refrigerator cold. So,
well, and there's another thing too, you know, on the refrigeration side, there's a lot of mini fridges out there that you can run on smaller inverters, and those would be well worth looking into. And actually, there are methods by which you can turn an old cooler, like an igloo cooler, into a mini fridge. Now, they do make ones that have Peltier elements in there that you can plug into a cigarette lighter, but those things, they seem to draw a lot of amperage. However, there is a system out there where you can take in, you can use coils of copper tubing, and you can circulate water in and out of a cooler, and you can put ice in there and have that that not only keep your stuff cool while the water is circulating, but you can put a core, like a air conditioner core, on the outside of this thing and blow a fan across it and actually have a little mini version of AC. And that's something that you could do with a small wattage water pump. It doesn't have to, you know, you could use like a windshield washer pump. It doesn't have to go through there fast. It just has to be able to circulate to keep that core cool. You know what I'm saying?
All right. Well, the only problem I see in your little scenario there is if your power's out, and you don't have the refrigerator run to with the little freezer, then where are you getting your ice?
Well, that's where that's where the preparation comes in ahead of time. You know,
bags of ice.
I
was just going to say, you know, I have maybe a potential solution to get cold without having to have ice or something to provide it without the power. I mean, you've looked at the evaporative cooling, right?
Yeah.
So coolers use it. So, you know, you set something up that will wick the water that you stick down at the bottom of a container down, you know, put it down in that and hold it up against whatever it is you want to be cold, and then put some airflow over that to evaporate the water off it, and it makes the inside get really chilly.
Yeah, and I was going to go to that one next, but on the ice situation, you know, some people make ice out of they'll make a alcohol and a water mix or a gelatin mix, and they'll put an ice pack inside the freezer and stuff like that. You don't have to go through that extreme. You could just get some soda bottles, fill them up with water, or some really good heavy-duty Ziploc bags and fill them up with water, throw them in the back of your freezer, and just forget about them until you need them. You know, you can use those to cool down the water while you're, trying to keep cool. Now, of course, these are only going to be temporary solutions. Your evaporative cooler idea is probably going to be a more long-term deal, because as long as you got water flowing down and you're blowing the air across there, you could actually take an old blanket, you know, and kind of run some slits down the back of that thing and then trickle water down the top of it and then blow your fan through that, and basically act like a radiator or a air conditioner core. You know what I'm talking about?
Right. Well, I was going to say the evaporative cooling works because when you evaporate, when liquid evaporates, the molecules and atoms that are turning into a gas pull heat from the rest of the core as it leaves. They use the same process to take carbon dioxide and make it into dry ice, because we just, I don't know if we've ever overcome this, but I know for the longest time we did not have the ability to compress carbon dioxide to the point where it would turn into a solid. The best we could achieve is turning it into a liquid under pressure, and to get the solid, the much colder solid dry ice, what they do is they compress it until it hits that point. And then they just release the pressure real quick, and all of the hottest atoms that are in that liquid evaporate off, turning straight back into a gas, and it pulls so, they take so much energy from the remaining mass of carbon dioxide that it chills and turns into a solid.
See, there's all kinds of solutions. The average Joe, though, I don't know how much of that they're going to remember. That's why I keep telling everybody that while the power grid's up, download all this kind of information. And
experiment.
Yeah.
Get experience. Get some experience now while it doesn't matter. Because when it matters, when the clock's ticking, you know, whenever the pressure is on, if you haven't had experience with this stuff, you're going to crack.
Yeah.
You will have mistakes. Even if you succeed 20% of the stuff you have to do, if the other 80% is not getting done, something in that 80% could cost you or one of your loved ones their life. I mean, you want to have all this stuff down because this, everybody thinks that this is a joke to be without electricity, but this ain't camping.
No, it ain't. And there's one other aspect to lights being out that a lot of people don't really consider because, you know, in your average life, you're used to being able to just walk over there and turn the switch on, and you got lights. Right. Well, after you're in the dark for several days, it starts to get a bit stressful, you know, especially if you don't have a fan going and it's hot outside or even worse, cold outside, and you got a fireplace, but you don't have no way to really circulate the heat through the house, and everybody's...
Right, yeah, I was going to say, without that fan to blow it around, you suddenly see just what it was like to live in the dark ages.
Yeah.
Which was comfortable. You know, you sit in front of a campfire just on a chilly night, and you should be able to remember pretty quickly, hey, you got to constantly turn around, or otherwise you roast on one side and freeze on the other.
So what people really ought to consider, you know, is to, before anything ever does happen, and maybe nothing will ever happen, but you know, you can go out and buy insurance just in case, and you do all kinds of other things just in case. So, you know, if you want lights around your house, there's all kinds of methods that you can use, you know, like the little solar lightings, those ones, little walkway lightings, those aren't really much to brag about as far as light goes. But if you have those out in your garden, you know, little walkway lights, and you can always bring those in for lanterns and stuff like that, anything is going to be better than using, you know, candle power or nothing at all.
Right.
And
well, I wouldn't say maybe nothing will happen, because there's always something is going to happen. And as they said in that show Fight Club, on a long enough timeline, everyone's survival rate drops to zero.
Yep.
And our system that we're working within is an ecosystem. It's it's a living organism too. So on a long enough timeline, it's going to die too.
Well, so, I can tell everyone how to build a mini generator, because there's all kinds of things that you can salvage stuff out of, like old microwave oven transformers and all kinds of different old appliances that you can get electricity out of. One of the things is if you got one of them electric treadmills, they usually have a 30 volt or 24 volt permanent magnet motor in there that actually runs that treadmill around, and you can actually use that as a generator right there. You know, put it on one of those old pedal bikes and get your exercise and charge up some batteries at the same time. You know, there's all kinds of potential with that kind of stuff, but you got to think about it ahead of time. You know, it's not going to be something like, you know, you can just throw it together at the very last minute and, you know, and all said and done. You know, I could do it, you know, you could do it. We could, pull things out of appliances. Any of the permanent magnet motors out there are already ready-built generators, you know.
Right. So some of them, you have to open them up and take, like, the little diodes and stuff out of them that they use to make them run one direction so they don't accidentally run the wrong way.
Yeah.
But anything that's basically got a permanent magnet and coils, you can draw power from.
Yeah, and so, you know, hey, if you could throw it up there on a tall pole with a little fan blade, you know, like off of a box fan or something like that, and, you know, you got yourself a little wind turbine up there. But, the key is, like you were saying there earlier, is to do experiments with it, you know, try it out. And that way you got some experience with it, and you know that if the power grid goes down and it doesn't come back up for a long time or maybe never, then you still have some sort of electricity going on. And there are other means of air conditioning, such as if you've got enough property that you can do so, you can take a 30-foot culvert pipe and you can bury it 6 feet under the ground, and you put one end up in your house and the other end up vented with a screen on the opposite side, and you can suck the hot air from the outside, and as it goes down underneath into that culvert pipe, it will cool down and actually cool your house. There's actually, where I'm at, not too far from where I'm at, there's a castle that they use a cave that's underneath the cave to actually cool the house. Wow. Now, if you, well, they, yeah, they use the cave itself as the air conditioning for the whole castle. It's pretty cool. But if you got a well around...
Geothermal cooling.
Yeah, it works. I mean, when you're inside this castle, I was in there in the middle of July, and it was just like as if you had regular air conditioning, but there was no power to the whole deal. When the wind hits the side of the hill, it blows in through that cave and blows that cool air up through the castle.
That's right. Yeah. I was going to say, that's the thing, is the earth is always at this kind of constant, like 68 degrees.
Yeah.
Once you get deep enough down.
Well, and that's what I was getting ready to say. If you have a well on your property, you know, like one of the old style bucket where you dip the bucket down in the well, you got some cool air right there that you could actually run a hose or conduit, whatever you know, like the vent pipe that they use for different drainage or whatever. You could run that down in there and circulate that cool air up into your house. Because that well is going to stay cool down in there. And so there's another method by which you could actually stay cool. Now, on the opposite spectrum, if you're in the section where you're already cold and you don't care about air conditioning, you know, well, there's methods out there to stay warm as well. And my brother brought something to my attention a long time ago about whenever you have a car or you want to put some survival stuff inside your car. He said one of the things that you let a lot of people overlook is heat. You know, you throw some blankets up in there, and, you know, that'll keep you warm to some extent. He said, but get you some candles and throw them up in there. And he said, believe it or not, as little amount as a candle you'd think a candle puts off, you know, in that car would actually keep it warm enough to where you won't actually freeze. So, you know, I gave it a shot one time. It was cold as crud outside, and I put a candle in there, and, you know, it was still not hot, but it wasn't freezing cold in there either. So, you know, there's something to think about.
Right. Well, and another thing, too, is that if you don't have any experience with all these things, even if you are a fairly competent person and can figure them out on the fly, that's still going to put a lot of extra stress on you so that you can't pay attention to other aspects of your life. So, you know, that makes you more open, say, to, you know, being conned or something by somebody else who's struggling to basically try to, you know, try to get the things that they need because they didn't prepare. But that's, you know, that's in their, that's the tool that they have in their toolbox, is to basically, you know, sponge off of other people. And here they come along and, you know, you're busy, you know, paying attention, trying to get things sorted, and they start talking to you, and you're like, oh, yeah, okay, uh-huh, yeah, yeah, while you're, you know, busy doing your thing. And sure enough, by the time you get everything sorted, you know, go, wait a minute, where's the loaf of bread that we had here and the other stuff that's here? And everybody else is standing around going, well, you told that guy he could have it. What? You know?
There was they got the Doomsday Prepper shows, but there was another show that was on there for a bit where they were talking about how they weren't going to prepare or nothing, that they would just wait till if something happens, they'd go out and take what they wanted.
And yeah, their preparation is going and picking up guns or something.
Yeah, and so, you know, that's that's something else to consider. You know, when the power grid goes down, you know, usually whenever they get a lot of looting and stuff is like during blackouts or brownouts, you know. Mm-hmm. And so you got to prepare not just for safety, but you also want to prepare for, you know, a little bit of comfort going on there.
Right. Well, I was going to say, and that's probably something you should consider too, is that if you're going to provide yourself with power when the power is out, probably be a good idea to set your house up so that the rest of the world isn't going to know you've got power while the power's out, or you will have those looters coming to your door too, you know.
Yep.
Kind of fly under the radar. Grab those people that you know are good people around you and hold them close and keep them safe, but, you know, don't let the rest of the world know that, you know, here you are sitting there with, you know, some nice goods for them to all have, because unfortunately most of society, especially in a situation like that, turns very psychopathic, you know.
Yeah.
It turns into a you or me situation, so.
I'm typing a message here. Yeah.
There's no such thing as dead air on Shaz's radio.
Yeah, yeah. So that makes for good radio, so I'm typing a message. I'll try to add this guy to the call if he wants to come in. Uh, talk. Anyway,
I'm waiting on you.
Oh, I got to add him to contacts first.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, so I'm wondering how many people of all the listeners out there have actually done anything towards preparation. You know, now batteries, there's another thing to factor in. You know, if you put some batteries on the shelves, you need to check them every once in a while, and you know, extra flashlights and stuff like that, and just have them on hand, just for, you know, emergency purposes. You know, it doesn't have to be a natural disaster or a man-made disaster. They could be working on a power line down there in the middle of the night, you know, and you need to be able to get around in the dark.
Right.
So,
or it could just be your breakers went out and you can't see in there to get to them. So, you know, you need to bust out the flashlight to go back in there and, you know, check your breakers and reset them and everything.
Well, that's a definite, because, you know, I set my house up specifically to every single room has its own individual breaker, so that if my kid's in there blowing up a Nintendo or something like that and, you know, shooting fire out the wall, then it's not going to shut my TV off.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, Those are the kind of things that if you're going to build a house, you might want to look ahead of time too. Is making sure each and every single room is on its own individual power source. And speaking of power sources, brings me back to solar. You know, you could put a small battery bank in your closet or whatever. You know, if you do this right and, you know, looking at all the safety concerns. You know, like obviously you don't want hydrogen explosions off of batteries. That's why they always tell you to somebody trying to call me here. Doggone it. And I turned all the sounds off too. I'm gonna tell them to call you.
Oh no.
Wait a second. Hold on. All right, let's go for a quick music break, and I'll get this sorted out.
Excellent.
All right. Throw a couple tunes on there. We'll get it sorted out and get everybody on here who wants to come in. All right, here we go. Stay tuned. I'm on my way.
A wee mower, a wee mower, a wee mower. In the jungle. Stop! Oh! Oh! Ow! 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 Stop! Oh, stop! Oh!
Boy, there's a radio blooper for you. Hello, everybody. We're back. We're getting everybody lined up in the call right there. So, who all we got in here so far, Rick?
I just dragged in Thomas Anderson.
Did you get Larry?
I'm going to get Larry right now. I'm going to drag Rick, see if he wants to speak. I got Barry Prince. Let's see if I get died on in here, too. I'm going through.
All right, well, we're live on air.
All right, go ahead. We'll talk, you guys. You guys talk. I'll just drag people in.
All right, everybody. Well, we were talking about what do you do, worst-case scenario, pop quiz style. You know, the power grid went down, and you got what you've been prepared with to work with. So, you know, what do you got?
The question is, how long do you think you would last, before it needs to come back up, before the grid in general comes back up, not just power, but everything. You know, let's say if the power grid does go down, like really seriously goes down, you do realize that that means that basically there's no gas at the pumps because all the pumps are electric.
Yep, and a lot of water companies are all electric.
Right. No water, no gas. The stores, very few of them are going to be willing to open their doors because their cash registers run on electric, and you know they want to get paid for any food and whatnot they're holding on to. So anything that's supposed to stay cold, is if they don't have backup generators, it's getting warm and going bad. I mean, it's a lot that can go wrong just from, you know, everything being tied to one tiny little thing called the electron. You know.
Yeah. Today's show was brought to you by the letter E. Electricity. Anyway, you know, there's a lot of things to factor in there. And when you're talking about the power grid going down, it's not just your house that's involved. And if you have extra stuff, and it's not a fear-monger kind of thing, it's a kind of common sense thing. The last thing I want to do during a blackout is go to the grocery store to try to get a gallon of milk, or flashlight batteries, because... Yeah, the average Joe out there may not have the common sense that you got. And, you know, people fighting over the last roll of toilet paper or whatever, you know. I want no part of that. Right. So I want to at least keep...
Yeah, this isn't French toast.
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure who all is familiar with that, but that's kind of, you know, the mentality and the key phrase for whenever, like, bad weather's coming in. You know, it's French toast weather, meaning, you know, you head to the store to get, you know, milk, eggs, and bread. To make sure you got enough to make it through, you know?
Yeah. So I like to keep...
This is more serious than that.
I like to keep at least a 30-day supply on hand, things that I know that I'll be using for the month. You know, worst-case scenario, I don't got to go shopping next month. But, you know, at least I know that if anything goes awry, that, you know, my kids can come over and stay with me, and they'll have some extra stuff on hand, And I told you before that what we do when we got a little pantry built up is that we recycle that by, you know, helping neighbors out that might be falling on hard times or something like that. So it's not just sitting there not being used. You know, it's there for emergency reasons as well. And emergencies happen all the time. You know, people fall short and, you know, want to make sure everybody's fed, that kind of stuff. But... you know,
yeah, I got a good one that I bet a lot of you guys never heard of this one. If you are stuck and the power's out and you've got no way to get any water and you didn't stock up like we've been telling you, if you have a water heater in your house, there's a valve at the bottom of it, and that water heater probably has anywhere between 30, 50, 60 gallons of water that you could literally use to drink and bathe for a few days.
Yeah, and there's one thing to factor in there, though, especially if you live out in the country where you have hard water, is that there could be a lot of calcium built up in there. See, a lot of folks don't realize that you should take every so often and drain your hot water completely dry. You know, shut it off, drain it completely dry, and refill it, because that calcium will actually build up and destroy the inside of that water heater after a while. You'll have half full of calcium and stuff like that.
And yeah, no kidding. I got to change the heat and filament every 6 months out here because it destroys it.
Yeah, well, if you flush it all the time, you won't have to. You just want to keep that calcium buildup from actually getting in there, and you can actually use it, white vinegar to dissolve the calcium, and you flush it back out, and then you'll be all right. Actually, those old coffee pots, you can save those if you get them before they get completely clogged up. You can circulate white vinegar through an old coffee pot, and it will take out the calcium and clear that that little element back out again. But the water heater idea is a good one. It just might taste a bit funny if you got a lot of calcium and hard water buildup in there.
Well, it's better than dehydration, right?
Yeah, but that's a good thing. Good thing you brought up there, because you know, if you keep your hot water heater maintained, most hot water heaters, unless you got a really small one, are anywhere from 15 gallons all the way up to 40 or more gallons of hot water. You know, and you know, obviously it's going to be cold water if the power grid goes down. But either way, you've got some water there.
Tank.
Yeah,
and you have some water on reserve that you didn't even realize.
One other thing,
there's another source of water you have on reserve that most people probably will find distasteful.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say it.
The tank on the back of your toilet is completely clean, unless you know you've done something wrong to it. It's just fresh water that's sitting in there waiting to be used.
Yeah, and don't put any of that stuff that's blue chemicals to keep your toilet fresh and all that, you know, because that's
going to destroy that. Yeah, I would say if you're going to do that, hang that in the bowl. Yeah. That way it does its job in the nasty part of the toilet instead of in the clean part.
We're also joined by Larry Woods.
How you doing, Larry? You got any ideas on what's the worst case scenario when the power grid goes down? You got any ideas for that?
Absolutely, get out of the city.
Yeah, definitely out of the city. I agree with you 100% on that one. I'm staying in the country. You couldn't pay me enough to go to the city.
Yeah, when the grid goes down, it's going to be chaos in the cities. But we won't have anything to worry about, because within the first 2 or 3 weeks, most of the people will starve to death or freeze to death.
Well, yeah, hopefully,
a lot there, and there's a very high concentration of people to consume what little is there. People aren't aware in the city of just how dependent they are of the constant infusion, or of you know, life goods that they get every day or every couple days. I mean,
oh yeah, the stores in general are only stocked 3 days, and it takes them anywhere 2 weeks to a month before they can get them restocked.
Right. Well, I was going to say, they stock it every, like, three days or something like that. But, I mean, they like it that way because that keeps everything nice and fresh.
Yeah. But I'm saying, worst-case scenario,
it's not so nice.
If the trucks can't get fuel and they ain't got no power and the stores are keeping their doors closed anyway, then chances are you're not going to get it restocked.
And right. Well, the first thing that comes back up are going to be the trucks, because the diesel pumps that they have at those trucking yards and whatnot either have backup generators or they're not electric. And diesel trucks don't, if it's a power issue where the power's being knocked out continuously.
Yeah.
Once you get a diesel engine running, it doesn't use electricity. It uses heat and pressure to run.
Well, and there's a good point right there as well. If you're going to buy you a generator, the best generator you can find is something that's got a diesel engine on it, because the difference between a diesel engine and a gas engine is, like in your regular car, you can't leave your regular car idling too long because it'll overheat, you know, after idling for several hours, you know, unless you got a really super good cooling system in that. They're not designed to run unless they're going down the road and wind blowing through that radiator and taking away some of that heat. But diesel engines, that actually have oil in the fuel, and so it doesn't scar your piston walls up, because it's keeping it lubricated no matter if you're sitting there idling or not. And so there's something to factor in. If you're going to get a generator, get you one that runs on diesel, because you can also modify diesel engines to run on biodiesel, such as French fry oil or, you know, stuff like that.
Over, or butter.
Yeah. Anything that's, you know, basically oil-based. There's all kinds of, you know, my buddy, he's got like 20, 50-gallon drums of French fry grease.
Well, I was going to say, if you live far enough down down south and you're on the, you know, the northern hemisphere, then, you know, as long as you don't get any frost, you can always grow some diesel trees. They're trees that basically, actually, their sap can, you just filter it to get rid of any bark and whatnot out of them, and you just run that right straight into your diesel engine that runs with no problem.
Yep. And if you learn about the wood gasifiers, the wood gas is a good fuel too. You know, it's you got to do it right and have a filtration system that will filter out all the crud, but the gas that comes out of it will run an actual gasoline engine. They used to do it back in World War II, I believe it was. Might have even been World War I as well, whenever they run low on fuel.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually the Germans did it because everybody knew they were up to no good, so they cut them off. They had to turn to something else.
Yep. And then
the wood gasifier works a lot better, too, on something like a car. If you're going to try to use it in your house, you've got to have something set up, like you set it up out back or whatever. It's got to be set on some sort of shaker to keep it working, because otherwise it'll clog up.
Yeah. And hydrogen as well, you know. Everybody's all, you know, it takes too much energy to produce hydrogen, but there's methods by which you can actually build you a cell that don't take nearly as much. And I'm actually working on a high-voltage hydrogen cell with doesn't take a lot of amperage to do. But
there's hydrogen in that system that I was talking about, too, where you're basically cracking alcohol with sulfuric acid, and what it does is the sulfuric acid goes in and it cracks apart the water and the carbon complex, the ether molecule, and it separates them up, but it doesn't connect the water molecule properly, so you get this hydrogen peroxide and hydrogen gas that comes off of that process, and the sulfuric acid leaves that whole process unaffected.
Cool. See, there's more solutions.
Right, if you've got alcohol available, then, you know, you can make all the fuel you need.
My best suggestion for people out there with low budgets would be to go out and watch, go watch my video, Simple Solar. I'm not trying to pimp my YouTube, but, you know, yeah, I am. I'm trying to pimp my YouTube.
Go ahead.
Go watch my Simple Solar video, because there's some really nifty little gizmos that you can get out there. There's solar fans that actually go up in the window of your car, you know, and the actual solar panels on the back, but you could put those on the windows of the inside of your house, and it runs a fan. It don't take any batteries. It's just straight sunlight. And, you know, you could actually modify them if you wanted to and change it over to where it would actually charge batteries and run even during the night for a while either way. But it's not that expensive to go out there and get little solar panels. And there's also the little, we talked about this earlier, the little garden walkway solar lights. You can get those for $1 or $2 a piece, depending on where you're at. And those will make good little lanterns for walking down your hallway and stuff like that.
I have to interject.
Go ahead.
eBay.
Well,
eBay.
Yeah, eBay is good.
There's a company called M&L Solar. Look them up. I get nothing from this. The only reason I'm pushing them right now is because they've got incredibly good deals. I have some of their cells here. They sell brand new, imperfect cells, like there's something, you know, the box got dropped or whatever, and there's little chips and stuff. But they're still brand new. They've never been used for so cheap, so incredibly cheap. I mean, you can buy them as little as like 14 cents a watt.
And I need to take a note of that. M&L?
M, like, I don't know, Michael, and L, like Lester.
Okay, cool. I'm going to check that out later, because
look for broken solar cells when you search their thing, or look for almost whole solar cells, and you'll get, they're just ugly. They're not, you know, not producing power. They're still producing plenty of power. They're just not.
Hey, I don't care about pretty as long as they work, you know.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Actually, you shouldn't be able to see your solar cells. If you've got a solar cell rig set up, your solar cells should not be able to be seen, because you want the light diffused over the surface of them. So, like, something that's scratched up to the point where you can't see through it properly anymore, but is clear, will give you the best results. And you can't see how ugly a solar cell is if the surface has been sanded down to get, to dull it down.
While we're on the subject of solar, let's also talk about ways by which you can actually cool that solar panel down and make it more efficient, and use that water off there to, let's say, maybe you want to recycle some water and make a hot water shower or something like that. You know,
I can tell you right now, the fastest, easiest way is to get clear silicon sealant, GE2, 25-year lifespan.
Yeah.
Paint your solar cells with that completely. You can, use it and put it on there the thick way, just being really careful to cover them after you've soldered to them and everything. Or, get a little bit of toluene for breaking down. It's like a really, really powerful paint thinner, so be careful with it. But you can dilute that silicon caulking compound until it's like a honey texture. It'll run like honey, and you can dip your solar cells in that, let them hang out and dry until the rubber cures over them, and then you can drop those in between. Like, you basically just put a spacer between two sheets of plastic and seal up the edges around that plastic, and then you can run a tube to one side and pump water in, and a tube to the other side and pump water out.
Yeah.
And it'll flow over top and under those solar cells and keep them nice and cool.
Well, I was thinking more along the lines of coiling up some copper tubing behind the back of the solar panel itself, and use that to transfer some of the heat away from the solar panel. But you can also put some black hose out in your yard, coil it up, put it on the roof of your house. That'd be the best. And pump water up in through that and back down into your hot water tank, and then there you go. You got some, and actually that would be good to save some money during the good times when the power's up, because your hot water heater will kick on whenever the water temperature gets down to a certain temperature. Now, if you can keep it up to 160, 180 degrees all the time by keeping that on your solar panel, your hot water heater will never kick on, which will save you a lot of electricity. So there's a good idea right there that you can do right now.
Wait, if you put two e-check valves on that that line, it's one that's before it's running in and one that's before it's running out, so that the water, when it heats up, it's going to expand. And when it expands, it'll do like it does in a pop-pop boat. It's going to push out.
Yeah.
And if it's only able to go out one direction, then what's going to happen is once it's done pushing out and the temperature drops back down because it has the pressure's released, then it's going to suck water in from the cold side.
Yeah.
And prepare to heat it up.
So you wouldn't even have to have a pump per se on that one.
Nope, the heat becomes the pump for you.
Yeah. So there's a couple good ones right there, man, because like I was telling everybody else, if you took one room off the power grid per month, as far as just lighting alone, and you take that money that you saved every month from your light bill,
take another room off.
Yeah, take another room off and keep on doing that until you got your entire house off the grid as far as lighting. Because lighting's going to be one of your biggest waste energy. The kids go in, they turn the light on in your room, they don't shut the lights off on their way out or anything like that. And so, those pennies add up after a while. But,
right. I wouldn't say that's the biggest expense. That's just the most consistent.
Yeah, well,
If you run AC, that's a huge power killer.
Yeah, I agree with
especially
you on that.
Central.
But I'm talking about just what is actually used the most outside of your AC system. And right. there's another point I'd like to get to as well. You could actually create a really awesome air conditioning system using that evaporative deal that you was talking about earlier, and using one of these old water coolers. I don't know if you ever seen them. I'm sure everybody's seen one before. They use them in offices, and they got the big jug that hangs upside down in there and cools the water down. But if you coiled some copper tubing down in there and you circulated water through that down into a system where you was going to be pumping the water back up and, kind of sending it down a waterfall and blowing air across that, you could, for a whole lot less than running your air conditioner, because those got really tiny compressors in them, but they get really cold. And, you know, you could modify one of those and be able to run this particular air conditioner off of a small inverter. What do you think?
Yeah, that sounds good. I mean,
matter of fact, I think I'll do a video on that. I've got one of those air.
That's what I was getting ready to say.
Yeah, I'll do a video on that and show people how to modify it. And I've got one out in my shed that I had been gifted. Somebody gave it to me, and so I'll modify that thing and make a cheapo air conditioner and show people, you know, the temperatures and all that kind of stuff on there. Sounds like a good plan.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But anybody else got any ideas or solutions?
Yeah, there's another way to do that. If you want to cool your house and maintain a constant temperature year-round, run your copper tubing with your water in it underground below the frost level. That will be maintaining a temperature like in a cave around 54 degrees.
And yeah, that's another good idea.
That will give you a smaller window of temperature range that you have to change.
That's another good idea. And so above ground for heat, below ground for cooling. You know, I was talking about the 30-foot covert pipe buried 6 feet under the ground, and that really does work. You know, it's you'd be surprised how cool it is. And some of the old farmers told me a trick a long time ago about hay bales, but of course now you're going to have to be careful with hay bales, because when they start to rot inside, they can catch fire. So
yeah, they start producing methane.
Yeah,
other explosive gases. So.
But
which is, you know, what you're doing with the wood gasification is you're just hurrying that up with a lot of heat. You know,
but
you're not burning the stuff. You're actually just heating the wood and letting it break down.
But for short term, as long as you monitor it, but for short term, as long as you don't allow that hay bale to rot, you can soak down a hay bale and using the same evaporative cooling that you're talking about, blowing a fan across that thing, you'd be surprised how much that'll cool down an old barn. If it'll cool down an old barn, it'll cool down your house.
Right. Yeah, anything that you basically keep water on going up into something on it under its own power. If anybody who's familiar with how the microtubes inside of the root system and the trunk of a tree works understands that whenever you have small capillaries, like the spaces that are in between, say, a beach towel, the water gets in between there and is attracted up into the air. It'll only fill it up. It'll never run out, you know, and like spill out the top. But, you know, you can set that up where basically one end is hanging down in a large reservoir of water, like, say, a 50-gallon drum that you collected rainwater or something in, and run the other side up behind, say, like some chicken wire that presses it up against a window in your house, and then, you know, some sort of fan or something to blow on that the top part that's behind the chicken wire, blow up in against it and bounce air off it. As the air is bouncing off of that, it's going to take the hottest atoms of those water molecules with it, and it's going to cause the remaining water that's in that towel to get super cold.
So now that we've pretty much established there's all kinds of cooling portions, now what would we do for the guys out there and gals that don't have warm weather? They're in the colder sections. What's some methods that you guys can think of that we could get them some heat, you know? There's, you know, wood burning is going to be the obvious. All right.
If you don't have that much wood to burn.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, how many AR, an AR-15 or an AK throws off some heat when you're firing it.
Yeah, but you're not going to want to try to warm your house with an AR-15.
how many people in today's society can make a fire without anything?
Yeah, well, that's a good point, because your average Joe doesn't even know how to change a spare tire, let alone, you know. And so, you know, I would say...
You get those people, too, that go and work out at the gym and whatnot, and they get cramps just from basically doing a little bit of that. So, I mean, really bearing down, if you have nothing at all, the only thing you're going to really be able to work with is, like, maybe a, a stick, a log, and, you know, your two hands.
Yeah, I got a muscle cramp. I got a muscle cramp lifting a 16-ounce soda one time, so.
Right. I mean, how many of them know how to make a, basically like a makeshift bow with, you know, a string from their shoelace and a bit piece of wood to wrap around that thing to get it spinning faster?
Well, here's a good solution for the heating portion of the deal. You know, everyone has a community, a neighborhood, you know, unless you're like a real jerk and nobody around likes you, which I would suggest that you try to rethink your lifestyle and change your ways a bit. And that way you got some contacts in your neighborhood that you guys could all get together and build...
Get some therapy and develop some self-awareness so you can develop some virtue, because that's what it's all about. People don't want to help people who are not virtuous.
Yeah, but if you get together as a community, and let's say one person has a wood-burning stove, and you say, look, okay, if worst case scenario and the power grid goes down and we're all freezing, do you mind if we all come over there and hang out with you and stay warm, and we'll bring some firewood and such? You know, build some.
What happened there?
Who's got the mic wide open? Thank you. Anyway, if you build some sort of community connections to where, you know, you can share resources. You know, one guy has the firewood and one guy has the fireplace or whatever, and you got an emergency plan that, you know, if things get going bad, that you... I got an echo. Hello there. That's pretty cool. That's a radio no-no. Anyway.
Buddy, turn your sound off. Turn your speakers down, buddy.
Oh, I love Muddy. He's cool.
He's the coolest nighttime, early morning DJ.
Yeah.
Well, afternoon over in the UK.
I love his shows. I wake up in Saturday mornings and it's Muddy Radio, man. I just love it. He's got some good tunes and a lot of good laughter and stuff.
Looks like you fell out.
Oh, don't leave, Muddy.
Maybe we chased him off.
Oh, man.
I'll drag him back.
All right, cool.
We ain't done yet.
Anyway, like I said, you know, one of the things, getting you some resources with some neighbors, you know, making an emergency plan, that would be a good thing for the heating portion.
I believe the phrase for that is networking.
Yeah, networking. There you go.
It's not just for computers anymore.
But there are also other alternatives to heat, you know. There's, what do they call them, sternos. You know, little propane bottles and stuff like that. And keep in mind, anytime you're going to be using anything that has any, you know, gas expelled, you're going to have to make sure it's well ventilated. But
yes.
If you use that in a method by which, like, maybe to heat some water up and send the water through a radiator system, and you keep the fire portion away from, you know, like maybe out in your garage in a safe zone that you build ahead of time that's, like, fireproof, and then you heat up the coils of copper tubing or whatever you got available and pipe that water into your house and use a radiator system, you'll get more use out of that little can of sterno than you would just having an open flame in your room. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But there are solutions.
Say, there's that idea, too, that's circulating around of using magnets on a spinning disc against, like, say, copper tubing to heat up a fluid that's running through it. And,
yeah, that works,
I mean,
too.
If you're doing that, you know, what's to stop you from, you know, and you've already got a windmill, why not go ahead and use a little bit of gear ratio differential to speed that up and run that off of, like, say, a windmill?
Yeah.
Isn't this the same principle with induction heating?
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, that's it. That's it. That's the one. So...
But you combine
it more efficient with solid state stuff and with no more.
If you combine those two, the windmill and the best person to talk to on windmills, Muddy, because he's got it down pat. But if you combine those two, the induction heating with the generating power, you know, at the same time, you could get some heat and, you know, some electricity out of the same process. See, that's what I like to think about is, what else can you do with your heat source or your electrical source to get the most benefit out of it? And these are things that you should think about before the power grid goes down, not, you know, after.
Right.
You there, Muddy?
That's not Muddy. Muddy's not in the call right now.
Oh, well, who else is in here? I want to make sure everybody gets a turn to talk.
We've gone to magnetic induction with our coils to produce electricity.
Cool. You want to tell people about it?
Sure. You don't need electricity to make electricity. All you need is magnetic induction by rotating a magnetic cylinder inside of a stationary magnetic core. You can induce a charge into a coil.
Well, I like the way that sounds, man.
That's what we've done. We've got a new toroidal-shaped coil that confines the entire magnetic field into the vortex only. It magnifies the field in the vortex, thereby increasing, as you add a load to it, it increases the magnetic field.
Well, we were talking about doing the same thing using bismuth, because bismuth has a magnetic quality where it doesn't necessarily block the magnetic field, but it redirects it. And so using that bismuth to send the field back in on itself, you know what I'm saying? Kind of like what you're talking about?
Bismuth is okay and it works, but you don't need it. It can be done with copper in the proper coil pattern.
Well, I would like to, if you looked into when we get ready to start virtual labs, would you be interested in doing some research on virtual labs with us about that?
Certainly.
Cool. Well, there's some more solutions there. So, go ahead, Larry.
We've created a coil, standard electrical formula, 1 volt through 1 ohm of wire, yields 1 amp. We put 1.5 volts from a battery, a flashlight battery, through 0.46 ohms of wire, a little less than a half of an ohm, and get 10 amps.
Cool.
And it's all just because of the pattern. You know what the surface effect of wire is when you energize a wire. All of the electrons move to the outer surface for flowing. If you have the pattern correct, all of the electrons will move to the core of the wire, the center of the wire.
But
don't have any outside magnetic effect.
Wouldn't that create a massive amount of heat as well?
Zero heat rise.
Huh. I'm fascinated in that.
We're using wire rated for 7.5 amps, and we do get a heat rise. We get a 5-degree heat rise at 30 amps.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
These coils operated at just 3 times the rated amperage of the wire do not heat up.
Is it such a design that the average Joe could actually build one, or is there a place where they can go and maybe check them out or anything? You got a website or
We're not going public with this quite yet. We're still getting our patents and our copyrights under control.
Well, so when you get that done, I'd be interested in taking a look at that.
Oh yeah, it's all vortex math, it's all pyramid math, Solomon math, all the ancient maths provide this pattern. All you got to do is put all of it together, and they're very easy. It takes us 2 people. It takes 12 hours to wind a 6-circuit coil. We have coils that are 6, 12, 24, and 48 circuits at this point. A multi-circuit coil is the only way to go in our mind, because they can be induction coils and transformers at the same time.
So if somebody had the capabilities of having one of these particular coils, then you would be able to run how much off of minimum power, do you think?
Without the magnetic drive, you get 10 amps per volt.
So, let's say I have a really good battery bank, you know, would I be able to, you know, basically send that into an inverter and run some AC appliances or anything?
Yes, you would. What we're doing right now is creating a coil that not only powers your system, you run power into the coil, it increases the power output, provides you with power to use, as well as charging your battery bank at the same time.
Well, that sounds like some fascinating work, and I'd be interested to look into that some more. So, you know, basically, we've got a few solutions on the table here. Nickel cadmium, nickel hydride batteries, rechargeable batteries is something everybody should look into. And don't underestimate a battery that has one dead cell, like an old car battery, because it still has some sort of storage capacity. Now, granted, you're not going to be able to run a lot with it, but, you know, a little bit of lighting or something like that, you can keep that thing charged up. And, you know, if you need to go on the cheap, you can go out and buy some junky old solar panels, and you don't even need a charge controller as long as you keep something running on that, you know, like a little light or whatever, that it don't get never get overcharged, then everything will be fine. I've got a system that I've been running here for like 2 years, and it doesn't have any charge controller whatsoever, and the batteries are just fine on that particular deal. Of course, now I do have some setups where I actually have charge controllers on there, and I got a larger, newer battery bank. But you see what I'm saying? There's all kinds of options out there. You know, you got a car battery in your car. Worst case scenario, you got a little bit of lighting as long as you conserve it. What do you guys think? Anybody?
That's a good way to go. Add a capacitor bank to that.
Yeah, I agree. They got some really good capacitors nowadays. Those, you know, boost caps and super caps that they got going on.
Yeah, super caps at NASA's selling 250 volt at 54 joule. That's quite a capacitor, and the NASA capacitors are built not to blow up.
Well, see, NASA's got a lot of cool toys, but they're not telling, you know, and that's the problem. Here on the Shaziz Radio Network and Mad Science, we are telling. I'm not patenting it or copyrighting anything, because I got a mission in mind to give everybody free electricity one day. And, you know, if I can at least benefit them in a worst-case scenario and give them some ideas how to survive, you know, like we've talked about, you know, water sources. Rick brought up the hot water tank that usually has a anywhere from 15 to 40 gallons or more in there, depending on the size of it. And Thomas mentioned the back tank of the toilet, not necessarily like, you know, you can let the dog drink out of the toilet section. But
you went there.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I caught the dog drinking out of the toilet anyway. This dog that I got, he's an old, he's have part chow and part lab, and he'll drink any water source. I don't know how he does it, man. I'd have some intestinal problems if I did that. So,
they're scavengers. Dogs are in general. So they're a system designed to handle just about anything.
Well, you know, if you had the system
doesn't
of
doesn't mean you should let them, you know, try to handle just about anything, but, you know. Yeah,
I tell him all the time, boy, don't be drinking that nasty water. I go and fill his bucket up with some fresh water, and heck, he's already had his drink, and he's not even interested in the fresh water. He drinks out of the pond. He'll drink out of the creek. Yeah, keep your eye on that dog. But, you know, there are solutions out there, and there's another thing that we should kind of touch on is water filtration. Do you guys have any ideas on natural water filtration systems that people can put together for worst case scenario?
Sure. Take a piece of clear plastic tubing, cut a green branch, take the bark off of it, put it inside that tube. That'll filter your water.
When you talk about green branch, is there any specific tree that they should or shouldn't use because of you know, whatever chemicals the tree might be made of? Like, let's say hedge trees, obviously, they got oil in them. That's why they burn so hot.
Hedge would be bad. Pine would be bad. Use like an oak tree or a maple tree. Yeah. The softer the wood, the faster the filtration.
What about...
Yeah, I was going to say, avoid any giant, bushy-looking kind of plants that look like giant Queen Anne's lace.
What about...
You know, you guys know what a Queen Anne's lace thing is. Some people call them a wild carrot. Those like, six-foot-tall ones, those are water hemlock.
Huh.
All you have to do is put your lips to that, and it'll kill you. Yeah, don't use that, for sure.
What about wild grapevine? Would that be a good filtration?
I don't know about that. I used to smoke it when I was a kid.
And corn silk through a corn cob pipe.
Absolutely.
Anyway, yeah, that'd be something to look into, because I noticed one time I was out chopping up some old grapevines, because I got wild grapevines running wild on my property, and I'm trying to get them under control because they like to choke out trees. But, you know, when I chopped it, you could see the water running up out of that thing, so I know water's getting through it.
Yeah, that would make an excellent source. The only problem with that is they're so small around.
Well, these are huge. These have been around for years, you know. They're not native to this area. You know, they were brought in for people who building vineyards and stuff like that, and then after a while got to running amok, and some of them... The main roots on them things are as big as a tree stump. I had to cut one down with a chainsaw.
Wow.
Yeah.
What about evaporative collection? I mean, you know, you said something that's clear up that the sun can shine through and over like a brackish water or something like that. And
yeah.
Sets it to one side so you can capture that water as it condenses on that clear plastic and runs down the other side.
That's a good plan, and I've been saving up a whole bunch of old bottles, glass bottles, so that I could do just that. Make a, if it's humid in the air or over water like you were talking about, that's all stank. When it evaporates, it'll go up in there, and you know, the temperature difference will create some moisture that'll trickle down into a container or something. You also have the possibility of using something like a pressure cooker, or even a pot modified with a lid, and basically do like an old still kind of thing, you know, where you heat the water up, boil it, and then get it into steam, and then run it through a condenser, and then back down in, you got fresh water again. So there's options there.
Right.
So, Muddy, he said, typed a message in there. Is he on yet?
He said he switched operating systems, so I guess so. Do we need to drag him in?
Yeah, well, he's in the chat room. I just don't see. I don't see his picture.
There he is.
Yay! Hooray for Muddy!
Here he comes.
And now, the funniest, zaniest DJ on Awake Radio Broadcasting United. Muddy, 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 Muddy.
Are you there, brother? I know you've been itching to say something. Anyway, till he jumps in there. So what other solutions do we got for water filtrations? I know that you can burn wood up until the point where it's just black, and you can make activated charcoal that you can use for filtration.
Actually, anybody who's interested in more advanced water filtration, while they still have time to do it, of course, because the whole key to preparation is to prepare before the problem.
Yeah, instead of after.
Look up Robert Murray - Smith. His last name is basically a hyphenated name, Smith, Murray Smith. He's got a lot of really good info on how to make graphene coated sand.
Huh, that's a sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm. So that, and he's got some graphene foam technology that people can basically make in their home. I mean, he's all about basically bringing it down to the everyday man's possession, you know, like making kilns out of microwaves and stuff like that, you know.
And supercapacitors from that graphene as well.
Yep. Oh, yeah, he's pushing that pretty hard. When we talked about hydrogen earlier, there's a substance that it takes sunlight and it cracks water apart. And the stuff is so incredibly expensive. If you go out and buy it, it's like, you know, $1,500 for 10 little grams of it. And He's got a video on exactly how to go about just making out of plain old, you know, dollar per pound urea and a microwave oven. So, you know, you go check his videos out and see what all he's got. He's got tons and tons of info on how to make tools from scratch, too, that normally cost a fortune, like centrifuges and spin cyclers and all sorts of stuff like that. Spin coders.
Okay, so for your preparation needs, if you're too inactive, I'm not going to say lazy because that wouldn't be very nice, but if you don't have the get up and go before it got up and went, so to speak, then at least go out and get you some bottled water, some jugs of water. Keep them in a dark place away from the sunlight so that they won't start to grow. Creepy crawlies or moss or anything like that in them in case you need them, and just kind of rotate them, use them up every once in a while, and just have some extra water on hand, some batteries, and
work with people in your neighborhood if they're busy, if they've got to get up and go, then donate to them so they can getting up and going and be ready for more than just themselves whenever things do collapse.
That would
and
be
you
the
can, you can check shakeandwakeradio.com for instructions on how to make your own coffee IV also.
Yeah, we're gonna make a coffee Tesla coil for Annie. But if you network, like Thomas was saying, with your community and you know what kind of resources, start your little community group now while everything's cool and everything, and start talking to everybody. You say, just hypothetically, if something was to go awry, you guys could depend on me. Could we depend on you for certain resources, and heck, build you a centralized bunker if need be, where everybody could come there for worst case scenario. And, make it a community effort. Not only are you going to get to know your neighbors and that kind of stuff there, but you'll also have a backup plan.
I was going to say, you'll get to know them in under a context because, having a structured environment to come together under, why do people waste time going to movies together or doing things together that they've got an itinerary? And that's because most people are uncomfortable with small talk, with just getting together and just having a conversation and not worrying about where it goes. So, this gives you a chance to get together to have the conversation under a structured environment that has some flexibility. So, the small talk can creep in there and you can really get to know each other so that if things do collapse, you'll actually be able to get along too. Because, the one thing you haven't touched down on is how do you deal with cabin fever.
Yeah. That's
speaking of cabin fever, I just heard from Wild Bill Samsel, and he's been sick all week. He's going to go to the ER, so he is with us.
Well, send him our prayers and best wishes.
I hope he doesn't have that man flu.
Man,
why? Is that some new thing? He said he's had chills and fever all week long, and he just doesn't feel right.
Well, I've been talking to Steve Hope off and on. It takes like about a week to get a hold of him and everything, and he's had the band flu for almost a month.
Oh, man.
Wow. And, yeah, it puts the swine flu, it makes the swine flu look like a cold. So,
send him some hemp oil.
Yeah,
send him some colloidal silver.
Yeah, I guess we're cycling back up. We're going to eventually, every new flu that comes out seems to be worse than the last one until eventually
we're
going to
get... Yeah, because it's biological weapons being tested on the public.
Hold on. Before we get into all that, you have to ask yourself, was there somebody engineering Spanish flu back in the 1800s?
No, yeah. No. Obviously, people throwing urine and feces on the ground.
Now we're doing the next worst thing that you could do instead of throwing, the feces and urine on the ground and not having a clean environment. We're having too clean of an environment. We have all kinds of antibiotics.
Yeah, antibacterial soap is a good example of that.
But, right, I'm not saying that there aren't there isn't a natural reason for people getting sick, but there is a video out there we featured on the show, and we've had Lee Harvey Oswald's girlfriend at the time of the assassination.
Judith Berry Baker, who's come forward, and the other doctors that worked on these projects that literally said that the majority of the health issues that people suffer to today were created as viruses.
Well, without going down the conspiracy road for the moment, let's talk about what kind of stuff people should have on hand as far as medical supplies, because that's something else that people don't think of. Something as simple as a Band-Aid.
Right. You know? I would say, something as common and easy to come by as a broken leg. I mean, you can die from blood poisoning and whatnot if you don't have antibiotics. So
yeah, if I might plug, we have a new show on the network. Dr. Barnes and Nurse Amy do a health show. They are both a licensed doctor and a nurse that combine alternative medicine and natural medicine. They're big supporters of hemp oil and stuff like that, and their show is on it's on Sunday after Wild Bill's Samsel's show. You want to catch that, and their website is loaded with all these things about how to take care of a broken leg or anything you can imagine.
Yeah,
and
don't
as far as surviving when the hospitals are not available.
And don't just catch it. Take notes. Take you a pad and listen to the show and take notes and research some of this stuff while you got access, to the internet and such.
That download and print that stuff off that's most vital, because you don't know if you're going to be able to kick that machine.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you write this down, Annie? Go ahead.
Doomandbloom.com.
Doomandbloom.com. You sure?
So that's doom, like you're doomed, you're going to die, and bloom,
right,
like a flower, right?
Right.
Cool.
Doomandbloom.com. And what you'll find, they have a bestseller on Amazon, but they also have tons of links to every imaginable situation that could happen to you and how you could deal with it on your own, pardon the pun.
Well, see, there you go. There's another amazing resource that has come together via these networks, man. I'm telling you, what we got going on is so important to give people this kind of information. If we could get links to everybody, I'll even post if you give me some links to their website, I'll even post a link on Shazoo's Radio for those folks that maybe not on the site right at the moment. You can come check it out later, but you want to think about the medical portion, especially if you have any problems such as diabetes or stuff like that. People don't think about that kind of stuff.
Nurse Andy also has you can either buy a kit from her, or she lists all the ingredients and stuff in that kit so that you can start making your own first aid kit and have the things that you're going to need. In other words, if you want to go the lazy way and just purchase their kit and their book, you can do that. But if you don't have money and you just want to go to the website and print things out and read up about things, or if you'd like to look at the list and compile your own kit, she's happy that you...
You want to basically compile your own kit because you want to make it custom to your own needs, too,
Exactly.
Yeah. It sounds like she's kind enough to make sure you have all the info. You don't have to buy a kit from her to find out what's in it.
Oh, that's
awesome. It's not like the government. We got to pass a law before you can see what's in the law.
Yeah, right.
Too late. We got you now.
Yeah, kind of like Form S-510 hidden in the middle of a school transportation bill.
Well, either way, back on the subject there, the diabetes, I was wanting to mention, because there's a lot of alternative deals out there to regulate blood sugars, like cinnamon and... there's some benefits of
prickly
hemp oil, too. But
prickly pear, it has a natural plant insulin in the fruit, the prickly pear cactus. And it actually, as your system is digesting it, it converts into a a form of insulin that your body basically doesn't reject. Even if you've got type 2 diabetes, where your body is rejecting insulin, this kind of slips through and still gets used. So
cool.
And that's readily available around here. We eat a lot of it. The cool thing is, you just go out to the old cactus. If you water it in a few weeks, you'll have a whole bunch of new ears. And those are the ones that you want to eat after the, you know, last year's ears aren't as good as this year's, because they're, you know, it's like eating wood. But you basically slice it up about the size of string beans, and kind of in taste it kind of resembles okra. And you can do everything.
Yeah, that's not the fruit though. The fruit where the highest concentration is in.
You're talking at the top, the purple fruit when it buds up.
There's a verde, the green ones too. The difference in taste. Yeah, I was gonna say the taste.
It tastes like beets. It tastes like beets. But it's got a lot of
most of the stuff that I get, the purple stuff, the really dark purple stuff, tastes like a cross between watermelon and blackberries. Oh. And the green ones taste like a cross between like honeydew melon and pears. Right. But you've got to let them fully cure, let them fully ripen before they get that flavor. If it's for medicinal purposes, you don't really have to wait for that. Just boil that stuff to break down the needles so that all those little ones turn into mush and you know, go ahead and peel all that off and eat
it. I see. Yeah, the ones we got around here, we got the ones with the pricklies on it, and then we got the ones that don't have any prickles on it at all. Except a little microscopic one, you still dig those out.
Yeah.
But inside the fruit itself, it tastes like the ones that don't have the pricklies taste like beets, and it's got a lot of seeds in it, like a persimmon would.
So
right. Yeah, I was gonna say they look a lot like a really giant blackberry that's got a really big skin over it.
Well, I hate persimmons; they taste nasty. Anyway, so all this conversation came about by if the power grid goes up. These are things that your average Joe don't think about, because you can just walk over there and flip the light switch on, light comes on, you know, go to your water spigot, get water, all that kind of stuff. But when the power grid goes down, if it goes down, which a lot of people think it's going to go down, either way, if it does, you need to have something in line, you know. I'm not saying go full doomsday.
It's not if, it is when, because everything goes down at some point. Oh. So.
Yeah, I'm not saying go.
I was listening to the beginning of the show, and I was trying to figure out who to call for hosting. But going back over, the first thing you said was light. I've got, at the shop over my door, I've got 30 lawn lamps sitting up there, which I drilled a bunch of holes in the 2x4 and just set them in and tie wrapped it to a couple rods sticking off the top. Lights up the front real nice. You can see it for a quarter mile down the road. Real nice. Keep 3 in each vehicle. I have 3 solar panels on the roof at the shop, which is completely unattached from the grid, plus a wind turbine there. I have a 65-watt solar panel on each of my vehicles, and 3 lawn lights inside those. In my van, I have a 1,500-watt pure sine wave inverter, which I had to run some really heavy cables to, and an extra couple of batteries. And like I said, on each of the vehicles, 65-watt solar panels on each of those to help increase my horsepower by 1/3, and gives it the horsepower plus the gas savings as 1/3 of your gas. That helps out there. And I'm hoping to make an electric three-wheeled recumbent bicycle where you lay down on it just about, and it's got the two wheels in the front. And for heating, I heard that subject run up, a compost pile with a hose wrapped up underneath. Also, you can run a hose out there on your lawn, the big old, you know, the expensive black hoses. Run those out there on the lawn and run those in line with your hot water heater. It'll either give you hot water or replace the hot water as you're using hot water, so that you don't have to use electricity off your grid.
Yep, there's another good solution.
We get into colloidal silver. And I've learned a lot of spices and different things. If you got cancer or something, broccoli is a good thing to eat. The purple florets in there. And so I guess that covers all the bases we ran over. I figured I'd throw all that at you.
Well, appreciate that. That's good information.
Yeah, there's another one that wasn't mentioned when we were talking about starting a fire. if you've got sunlight to start a, and you you want to concentrate that to start a fire, one simple way is to get a clear plastic sheet and put some water in that, stretch it out and put some water in it.
Yeah, make a Fresnel lens.
Yeah, you make a water lens.
Right, well, and the water system basically you could take sand and fill up one of them 55-gallon plastic jugs. You fill it up there, you run gravel at the bottom and bigger rocks and PVC, and you have the PVC come out the side on an elbow up to the level at the top. After 2 weeks, the top 2 inches becomes an eco-culture. It eats all the bad stuff, and it actually what it puts out is good minerals and vitamins for you. So it's much better than the drinking water that you get at the store.
Well, we should take some more of this up on the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow. Since we're running short on time, I did want to mention something that I'm interested in. I wished Brian from Abrams Lab was on here because he's messing around with the Slayer exciters, and I've noticed there's some really good things that can be done with that Slayer exciter. Such as what we were talking about lighting, those fluorescent tubings, you could light up a lot of those with that Slayer exciter if done in the right way. You could actually do the same thing with a Tesla coil, but I think the Slayer exciter, as far as energy-wise, would be the less amount of energy to use for lighting up as many fluorescent bulbs as you could put
actually,
in line.
The two together work really well. There's the guy who basically pushed the Slayer exciter really hard also was lighting up whole fluorescent bulbs with just a AA battery running through a Slayer exciter and then pumping that power through a Tesla coil.
Cool. I like that idea.
A little mini one, too. Not even a mini one, just a little one.
I would like to get a hold of some of the Slayer exciters. Do you know anybody who does printed circuits?
They're not hard to make.
Well, I'd like to get some that are already put on printed circuits to run some tests with that I could do some videos on, and I'd be willing to pay anybody who could go through the effort to make that happen.
That's a few out.
Yeah, I would like to get probably at least 5 to 10 of them for an experiment idea that I've got that would basically use some energy from different things that we've talked about through all of these shows, different power sources. And if
you want to get some components for the Slayer exciter stuff, I would say look up G Bluer on YouTube.
Yeah, I think I'm subscribed.
He sells pretty cheap just to kind of help fund his research. So
I think I'm subscribed to him. I'll see if I can get hold of him. But I'd actually like them, instead of being on a breadboard, to be a more mobile, such as on a a regular printed circuit board to where I can solder the parts in and that kind of stuff, if you know what I'm saying. Because I want it to be...
I thought he had some stuff like that already, though.
Well, he may be. I haven't had it. I'll have to talk to Ryan from Abrams Lab, because he knows a lot about it. But if I can't get a hold of G Bluer, then I'll try to get a hold of Ryan on that deal. But I've got a lot of good ideas for some mobile systems that would really be beneficial as far as, survival kind of stuff. Anyway, we're down to like the last 6 minutes of the show, so I want to give everybody a chance to tell everybody your YouTube channels and that kind of stuff. Because there's a lot of research going on. A lot of these individuals out here are doing some really good research, fascinating research, and together, we can find the solutions to all the problems we've got in the world, and at the very least, at least be able to help our neighbors out in worst case scenario. So with that said, who wants to go first?
All I gotta say is I love you all, and thanks for joining King Shaziz today, and after Beverly's Hope Show, which is up next, we'd like to invite you all to the Super Saturday Rockin' Roundtable with our special guest, the lead singer of The Platters, Sonny Turner, will be joining us today. So that's going to be a fun time. So if you'd like to call up and talk to Sonny, he's wide awake, very spiritual guy. Give a listen after Bev today.
Cool.
Thank you, King Shaziz.
Thank you, man.
You ain't terrible, man. Knock it off.
Who's next?
www.youtube.com/muddymuddymudman. That's MUDDY MUDDY MUDDMANN. Mudman is like eight letters. That'll do it.
Cool. And Muddy, he didn't say it, but he does a lot of good wind turbine stuff, axial flux wind turbines. So who's next? Anybody? Don't everybody jump to the mic at once. Wouldn't want you to chip a tooth.
Yeah, axial flux wind turbine, solar, all sorts of different things, Stirling engine builds and all that kind of stuff. I like to do it all pretty much all for free if I can. But if not, cheap. Anything to torque the jaw of the industry.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, with that said, nobody else. What about you, Thomas? Do we still have Larry? Oh, Mitko. Mitko, there we go. Go ahead, Mitko.
Larry, well, for me, you can look me up at Kurt's site, kurtus.wavely.com, and researchers part of the site.
Cool. All right. Well, Thomas, you there? Did we lose Thomas already? Oh, he's asleep.
Dublin, Larry.
He just wrote in the chat he's going to be back in a minute.
All right. Well,
it'll be over in a minute.
Yeah.
Half the morning to you, Mr. Woods. Glad to meet you.
Good morning.
Larry, you want to give everybody your website real quick? We're going to get ready to hand this over to the Hope Show.
We don't even have a website.
Well, we got some folks that know how to build websites, so stay tuned and we'll hook you up somehow.
Sounds like a winner to us.
Thomas, you still right there?
Going once?
Thomas, you're killing me.
Going twice.
Yeah, he's got a pair of those glasses. He said ready for anybody. I couldn't take care of it, so get a hold of Thomas Anderson. I'm pretty sure he'd be happy to forward them over to you.
Yeah, everybody if anybody gets a link to Thomas's website, he's got some really cool. The guy's creative and he's very intelligent. Love to have him on all of our shows, and so
steampunk style.
Yeah, everybody.
We're also going to be raffling off some awake sunglasses, like in the movie They Live. When you put them on, you can see demonic people and you can see the truth in advertising and everything, man. They're awesome.
I gotta have them. I love it.
All right, well, I guess Thomas is gone then. All right, did anybody else not get a chance to speak?
Yeah, this is Dublin.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, Dublin. We're on our way out, brother.
I know, great show. Just the website you gave you, just say great show, and get a chance, look up graphene. It will convert seawater to fresh water, they claim, for 1% present cost.
Cool.
I'm waiting to see how it's done.
Alright, thanks a lot, everybody. We're going to go ahead and roll up out of here. Stay tuned for the Hope Show. You've been listening to Shaziz Mad Science, and I hope you all get the opportunity to join me on the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow, and we'll keep up the good works. Everybody stay tuned and take care. Peace and love.
Can you hear me? Give my creation
life!
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Will the owner of the great big butt please move it out of my face?
Crap.
Ah!
Operator, give me the number for 911.